You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, many people often talk about the lessons they want to teach their children, and that's correct, and how they can assist them in life while also raising them to be financially responsible adults. One thing that comes up quite often is a desire to build generational wealth, and we read a quote from Robert Kiyosaki who said, well, it's not only about keeping money, but it's about building that generational wealth. But what does that exactly mean, and what does it entail? Is it doable for the average person, an average person in the African economy who maybe lives from paycheck to paycheck? I mean, we all know that running a business is perhaps the most difficult thing. So you and I are just paycheck to paycheck people. So can we really build generational wealth when we are just a paycheck to paycheck people? Is it doable? Is there maybe a formula? Can we start somewhere? Those are some of the things that we just want to talk about. And as always, really appreciate his time. And a friend of the show, it is Teacher Makonisi. Good evening, sir.
Hey, good evening, Tapelo. How are you doing? Good
evening. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I've been a little under the weather the last couple of weeks.
But, is it?
Today's a fair. I feel really, really normal. So maybe you guys should have called me last week. I might have.
We should have. Yeah. We know you've got this effect that we have, right?
Yeah.
But I'm glad you're getting better, man. Being under the weather. I think it's a change of season.
Quite likely.
Sure. I know a lot of people that are under the weather, especially at this time. I think it's pretty normal. But if you're feeling a little bit better, we really, really appreciate it. And feeling a little under the weather, but took the time this evening. We want to really appreciate your time once again. And how's things?
Things are good. It's always an interesting time of the year when you're getting into Q4. And you start trying to find those tickets to go away on holiday. And probably less popularly, just don't forget January.
But
anyway.
Yeah.
that's a conversation that we had last time.
Yes. I was about to say that, one of the things that I took there was, and I suppose in connecting to what exactly you're saying is, you can only start booking tickets if you are prudent with your finances from January, right? And you put money aside because you can't be scrambling right now. It's the last quarter of the year. And the other thing that I think a lot of people are facing this time around is the fatigue. It always comes in around this time. I don't know why or how, but it's very difficult.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, if you want to look on the bright side, if you're fatigued, you probably had some work to do and some things to chase and chase really hard.
Yeah.
So maybe not so great to be tired at this time of the year, but the silver lining is, hey, you know, at least you had something to chase after.
Yeah.
Surely that's positive.
And bring us exactly to our topic. You've built something towards that generation as well. I think that would be the best way to look at this and say, hey, I've done so much. I've moved from X to Y and closer to my Z for building generational wealth and all those sort of stuff. But that's I suppose, the question for another day. Well, we wish everyone, of course, a great last quarter of the year 2023 as we get ready for 2024. Generational wealth. Hey, this topic, you know, I was thinking about it and I was saying, you know, one of the most needed conversation, one of those conversations that we should be having, not even once a quarter, but I think it's conversations that we should be having on a daily with families, with our spouses, if you have a spouse and kids and all that, and say, how do we build towards this year? Because my summation is that it requires everyone to be all hands on deck for us to be able to build some sort of generation. And it seems like it's a long, long way to get to, you know, that generational wealth, as if we are Mandela with long walk to freedom. But the question then is, can we clarify this thing? What is this generational wealth that's being punted around everywhere?
I think that's a great place to start, Tapelo. You know, what is generational wealth? And I think in its simplest form, it's wealth that passes through generations. So, you know, wealth that survives a lifetime. And somebody might even want to say, okay, so what do we define to be wealth?
Yeah.
And I think when we start talking about wealth, one of the things I've been trying to, and you know, in preparing for our chat tonight, one of the things I was battling with, I was trying to move away from the concept of excess.
Yes, yes.
And you know, if you followed our discussion last time, you'll also recall that I was quite deliberate in trying to say the answer to money problems is not more money. I think that's where a lot of us get it wrong. And so when we talk about generational wealth, I don't want us to think of excess. I want us to think of the ability to give the next generation a leg up. And in doing that, I think we then, you know, dissociate ourselves from the concept of excess, because we all know, if you look around any township, any neighborhood, you do know those families, those people that had that were rolling in the Benzes in the 80s.
Yeah.
They had houses all over town, and that stuff is not there anymore. And we do know that one family that had that one house, which is still the family house, people have grown up, gone away, they've built their own homes, but that house is still there, and they can come back and they can gather there for Christmas, for Easter, for family functions. And when you look at those two families, you know, the family with that little house has actually had generational wealth. You know, the parents have passed on, the house is still there. So the first thing when we talk about generational wealth is let's not automatically assume that wealth means excess. It does not. And so what then would we define as generational wealth?
Yeah.
I think it's the ability of the previous generation to give the next generation a place to start from.
So if we were to just look at that, so if I can come in there, because I don't want us to lose the trail of thought that you're bringing, because it sounds in itself counter-revolutionary to how we look at the question around wealth. It's almost like I need to have more to be able to then say I've built generational wealth. And the more we accumulate, the more we feel like we're moving towards that. So here's someone who hasn't even accumulated or moved. And you're saying to them, no, generational wealth does not mean you need to accumulate more. Or you are saying it's the excess bit of it that's not necessary.
Precisely. When we talk of generational wealth, we're talking of the ability to transfer assets. And if you want to actually break it down even further, we are talking of the ability to pass on economic means to the next generation. So if we look at my family, for instance, when my father left the rural area, whenever it was, to go to Harare to work.
Yeah,
you know, he got to Harare. He probably did not know anybody. Maybe he knew a relative or two. He found somebody that was willing to live with him, and then you know he got his first job. And as he started making his way, you know, he went and bought his, those days it was a wardrobe, wooden wardrobe. Then he bought a bed. Then he bought a plumber stove. You know, and everybody looked at that and thought, oh, he's moving on in the world, as he rented a half room somewhere, you know. If I were to look at that and say, how has my father transferred generational wealth? My father has worked, he has made it possible for me to not be able, not to have to start from where he left off.
Yeah.
From where he began, rather.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important concept when we start talking about generational wealth, to say that the next generation should not have to start from where the previous generation did. They need to be able to start from the next step, which leads me to the next concept, which is, you know, at its broadest sense, generational wealth just says you need to live your life in a way that considers the continuum of life.
You can't
live your life in a way that says, When I'm done, when my time comes to an end, that's the end of me. There's nothing more left of me, and the guys that are still around need to make their own way. The entire concept around generational wealth is to say that life is a continuum. There are things that happen before your time, which are the things that my dad and my mom would have done before I was born. then there is the time that I'm here,
yeah,
where I also get to make my own contribution. But there will be a time that comes after me in which my children and my grandchildren are alive.
Yeah.
And I should live my life with that view in mind.
Yeah.
That there's a life that follows me, and I should do my bit to contribute to that life that happens after I pass on. And I think that's the whole concept of generational wealth. It makes it maybe seem what's the term, rather philosophical.
Yeah.
And not tangible. But you know, you can define that in any number of ways, whether it's the fact that I can leave some money behind, whether it's the fact that I can educate my children, whether it's the fact that I can instill in them values that will help them to live their lives.
Mm.
All these things can constitute an inheritance that you are left and that you can then be able to use to better yourself.
Yeah.
So which is why I wanted us to divorce ourselves from the concept of excess when we think of generational wealth.
Yeah.
Because the nature of life is such that not all of us will be able to generate excess.
Yeah.
But generational wealth and inheritances are not just about leaving piles and piles of dollars and piles of properties or garages and garages full of cars.
Yeah.
If we do that, then it becomes exclusionary.
Yeah. You
know? And this conversation would not matter to some people because they're going to be like, listen, I'm never going to be a billionaire. Why should I be wasting my time worrying about, you know, what I leave the next generation?
That's exactly why I say that definition is in itself counter-revolutionary, because it goes against the tide in the world where we are told that the more you have is, you know, we'll say you're building wealth, you accumulate this and that. And like you're saying, for a lot of us who do not come from families where there's that, you already feel like, nah, this thing sounds very too far-fetched. It's a bit facetious for some people. We'll never even get there. But I want to ask this question before we move to the next one, to say, if that's what then is, and we accept it, and I accept that, I must be honest, I like the definition, and I've never looked at it like that, but I love the definition. And then saying, how do I juxtapose living? You know, if I need to think about the next child that I will have, or if I will have a child, what they, you know, might need. And that's like, what, 6, 7, 10 years from now when you might have a child. And like, but how am I supposed to live now and think about 10 years? So how do you balance the two?
I think we've touched a bit on that, right? When we were speaking about finances the last time, you know, the last time we had a conversation. Mm. One of the things that we said was that the answer to money is not more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, that's where we got to that point where we said, listen, if you don't have the right money habits, it doesn't matter how much money you make, you just make bigger problems when you've got bigger money.
Yeah.
Right. And we spoke of people earning probably the best part of R1 million a month, who are getting houses and cars repossessed, and for somebody earning R10,000 a month, that just doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah.
How does it happen? How do you go through
earning a million rand? Yeah.
You know, to the point where you've actually got nothing left.
Yeah.
And I think that concept also applies when we start thinking about leaving an inheritance or generational wealth.
Mm.
To say, it's what you do with what you have, not how much you have, that makes a difference, right? So if the habit that you have is that you do not spend all the money you make and you save a little, it means that little that you save is what you will leave behind. You know, so if I'm making 100 and I can save 50, from a discipline perspective, I'm not better off than the guy who is making 10 and he saves 5.
Yeah.
The discipline is the same.
Mm.
Right. And that is what makes the difference, which is why, you know, I believe that each one of us can leave an inheritance. We can all leave a financial inheritance, but we must also beware of good character and good traits and good teachings which help people live their lives after you are gone. So, you know, the guys who sit there and tell you that, listen, my father, was not a rich man.
Yeah.
But my father was a hard worker.
Yeah.
Each morning at 5 o'clock, I knew my father was singing hymn 82 because it was time to wake up and everyone needed to pray and we needed to get into the field and till that field. So what I know from my father is I must work hard.
Mm.
That guy has been given an invaluable inheritance.
Mm.
He has actually been given generational wealth.
Mm.
He has been given something of value from the previous generation that he can use going forward.
Yeah.
So sometimes, when people talk of people with money, sometimes they say, oh, he's cash poor, but he's asset rich.
Yeah.
And sometimes, we find ourselves being, cash rich and values poor.
Yeah.
And you've met people like that.
Yeah.
You've met people that have grown up in the lap of luxury, but they are rude. They are uncouth.
Mm.
They cannot speak with people. And as a result, those things catch up with them in the future.
Mm.
And you think to yourself, maybe they would have been better off getting a lesson in manners than getting a big fat check, a big fat bank account when their parents passed away. And so when I look at the concept of wealth, I look at it almost in an all-encompassing way.
Yes.
I don't discount the money, the houses, the cars. Those things are really, really true. But I think they are concepts or traits that enrich a life that in themselves become wealth. And when we start thinking of leaving generational wealth as parents, those positive character traits that we can put in our children should be part of the inheritance that we leave our children.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I love that broad thinking about this generational wealth thing, because amongst other things, it gives us all a fair chance, at then transferring something to the next generation other than just money. And like you said, we're not saying that it's not important, but we're saying there's other things that you can transfer as generational wealth, things like hard work and all that. My producer is listening, by the way. I want us one day, and I've been mulling over this concept of hard work and working smart and all those sort of stuff. I suppose maybe because it's end of year fatigue and all those sort of stuff. And as you take stock of your own life, you ask yourself, well, was I working hard? Did I achieve what I wanted? But I want us one time, if you can note that as well, to just let's unpack this thing of working hard and working smart. And what exactly do those two mean? Because you touched on it as something that you can transfer to the next generation. We know of people who work very, very hard. Like, these people work hard. And at the end of the day, from a monetary point of view, there's nothing. And then you find people who work very, very hard, and yes, there's things at the end of the day. So this concept, I've been mulling over it myself, and I would like to hear your thoughts around it some other time when you talk about that. But I want us then to get into the challenges, right? So now that you've brought in a very counter-revolutionary to what is known out there, to say it's broader than just money, what are some of the challenges then, other than money, right, that one can face when it comes to raising or even building this generational wealth?
Okay, the first concept, I think, we've touched on.
Yeah.
You've got to be deliberate about what you want to do.
Yeah.
And there has to be an element of planning.
Yeah.
The first thing, is we probably get very real in the conversation. We get a little less airy-fairy.
Yeah.
Is you've got to have a plan for when you're gone.
Yeah.
Some people call it a will.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to be able to have that. So you want to leave instructions around what happens when you are gone and how your issues are going to be handled.
Yeah.
That in itself also implies that you've got to make sure that you handle your affairs while you are there in a way that makes it possible for people to carry on after you are gone. I know sometimes as guys, we have childhood friends, we will go and we will put money together, we will start a business, there's no shareholders agreement in place, it's just me and my buddy, and we open this thing, we are co-directors, we are co-shareholders, we each have access to the bank account, and one day he needs to do a project, so I don't take a salary for 6 months, then I need to do a project, he doesn't take a salary for 6 months, and everything hunky-dory, it's all really, really fine while you're both alive. Now one of us, unfortunately, you know, comes to their demise. They pass away. Now my wife must start trying to figure out how she entangle with this mess. And this guy who's been my childhood friend, he's not my wife's friend. He's my friend.
Definitely.
And, you know, and if things come along as well, he may just decide that's the year he decides to turn evil. And he turns around and says, teach never put a cent in that business.
Yeah.
So now that he's gone, I'm free.
Yeah.
And I can carry on like I want. You know, so you could go to court, you could be in there for the next 5-10 years, you could probably come out with your share of the business. But the bottom line is, we kind of look at Titch and think he could have done better.
Certainly. I mean, I think we've seen that.
Which is, you know, there's the philosophical concept.
No, you can continue. Sorry, I lost you there.
Oh, no, it's okay. So I'm saying, so in as much as there's the philosophical aspects that we touched on previously, I think when you start getting into the nitty gritty of, you know, leaving an inheritance, you've got to have a will. That's the first step. You've got to take time while your faculties are about you. You sit down, you make an inventory of the things that you have and the things that you own, and you put some clear instructions of what you want to happen. You know, in the event of your demise, make sure you sit down with some experts, you know, a lawyer, an accountant, so that you leave something that, you know, can stand up to scrutiny and meets all the basic requirements of a will. You may not necessarily need a lawyer to do it, but it's always advisable because wills can be contestable on technicalities. And they may not always end up being as enforceable in the shape or form that you intended when you drafted them. So that's the first, absolute first step. Be deliberate, make a plan, put it down on paper, you know, have it kept in the right place, the right people, so that people know what to do when you're gone.
Sure. That's very important. And like I'm saying, I think if you look at most of the families in the African continent, that's one of the things which we struggle with, right? Where, you know, our mothers and our fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers have worked very hard and there's something to be left behind. But because they did not direct how that should be done, you know, some people get chucked out, some families used to be fine, now because the husband or the wife is gone, now you're chucked out. It becomes a long, protracted battle around who should be getting their fair share of some of the wealth that has been created over the working life, or the, you know, as the maybe some people in business who have been working and making sure that they leave some stuff for their share. So you're saying we should have a plan and have that plan in writing as well, so that we can be able to, I suppose, when such do come up, one can be able to take those back. Now, is this a far-fetched idea? This idea of generational wealth, especially think about it from an African child who's listening to us right now, and maybe even an African family that's living paycheck to paycheck, right? Barely making it every month, interest rates going up every other day, food inflation going up every other day, salaries not moving, all of us holding on to that little job that we have and all that. Is this a far-fetched idea of building generational wealth? Is it reserved for the elite and the wealthy?
So at the risk of sounding cliched, I think the answer is I don't think that it's far-fetched.
Yeah.
You know, when we started, we did say that excess is not the answer.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be a billionaire to do this.
Yeah.
We might have seemed to be dishing out platitudes when we said, you know, wealth takes various forms, and as a parent, there are character traits and beliefs and ways of working or living that you want to transfer into your children because you understand that these have worked for me. So you want to instill those values as part of what you give going forward. So, you know, If we embrace that particular thinking, then I think that, you know, every well-intentioned parent would have something to leave to their children that would be of benefit to them. But also the other thing is, when we had the discussion around financial planning the previous time, we spoke of responsible money behaviors. you know, the whole concept around money is, you know, you earn money, you spend money, you save money, and you invest money. And in those four concepts of earning, you know, spending, investing, it doesn't speak to how much you are earning. What it speaks to is the habits that you have around how much you earn. And sometimes we start off with bad habits, and as a result, you know, we cannot out earn. You cannot out earn bad money habits.
Yeah.
Which is why you could well find, you know, I've been in situations where I've seen people who earn a lot of money borrowing money from people that earn a lot less. And you can't understand how this thing works. That how is it possible that, you know, by the time it's time to pay the house help or the gardener, you've borrowed a couple of hundred rands from the house help.
Eish.
Who you're probably paying below minimum wage anyway, right?
Yeah.
And the issue is around money habits.
Yeah.
So even when we are saying, can you put a little money aside to be able to leave something for your children, even though you're not earning much, you know, you can if you have the right money habits.
Yeah.
You know, in a financial plan, for instance, one of the things that people need to be able to do is take out a life policy that looks after your children in the event of your demise while they're still minors. So some parents, by being prudent in doing that, have probably not lived to see their children grow, but they've made a plan that has still made it possible for their children to get an education annuity that still pays for their education when they are gone. So it's not because they earned a lot; it's because there was a financial plan that said, you know, so how do we preserve our earnings? How do we preserve how do we make sure that there's some money in the event that we suffer a calamity? So the issue of excess, you know, like I say, we could all use a little money, myself included.
Definitely.
But the answer is not always excess. You know, what matters most is the plan that we make with what we have. So if you're realistic about your finances and you're earning 10,000 rand a month, you're not going to go and rent a house for 8,000 rand a month.
Definitely.
You could, because you could pay 8,000 because you're making 10. But how do you buy your groceries? How do you
whatever else comes?
Do you see what I mean? So it's actually not a case of excess. I always think that excess is the illusion. And once you fall for the illusion that, you know, the more money I make, the more comfortable I'll be, or the more responsible I'll be, you're already in trouble. You're just going to have bigger problems with a bigger paycheck.
Yeah, the more money we come across, the more problems we see. Someone said that. I don't know whether they sang it or they said it, but that's one of those things that one can look at. Is robbing a bank an option? Here's a question that came through. Is robbing a bank an option?
No, it's an option, but it's a terrible one.
Tish, you can't say that.
It's an option. It's an option. I mean, guys that rob banks, I mean, what's an option really? It's a choice, right?
When you
exercise an option, it just means you're taking a choice, right?
Yes.
So you could choose to rob a bank, but it's a terrible choice to make. You know, the odds of making it out alive are minimal at best. And it's the equivalent of winning the lottery. You know, winning the lottery is good. But when you read a lot of these stories of lottery winners, you know, they don't
end up very
far simply because the habits, the money habits are not right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that's why you find actually very interestingly that the guys that rob banks have to keep robbing banks.
Hey.
One would think if you rob the bank once, you won't need to do it again.
Hey.
But these guys need to keep robbing banks because they just don't have the right habits, you know. So I think that in itself may tell you that it's probably not the greatest option.
It's like playing the lottery, because you have this thing that says keep playing. And we know people who've played for years hoping to get this money that they can then build something out of it. And we know, and we've seen shows that, you know, show that they blew it and after it because the money habits, like you're saying, are not there. But Hey, we play, eh? We play the lottery for years and years with the hope that somehow we're going to get it. And yeah, I mean, the system will allow some people to get it so that it keeps everyone playing. I mean, that's because if no one wins, then everyone will like, ah, but this thing is just taking money from us. So I like the point that if you rob a bank, you're going to need to go back again and rob the bank again because, you know, you're going to get the money, but the habits are not there. But if you came out alive and you're fortunate enough to come out alive, don't do it. So it's a terrible option, like you're saying. It's not one that we should consider. I wanted to go back to the point around taking a policy, and I know I digress here, but taking a policy, we've seen how people build generational wealth on people's policies.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we deal with that one?
So for me, it's part of a plan, because what does an insurance policy do? At best, it ensures. It ensures that you do not suffer the fate of an inevitable but probable outcome.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if I buy a policy against theft in my house, I'm not going to leave the doors wide open because now I have an insurance policy. I'm still going to lock the door at night. I'm going to put the alarm on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to leave a set of my keys hanging by the portal simply because I'm insured. I still live my life and take the necessary precautions.
Yeah.
But in the event that I do suffer a calamity and somebody walks through my house and picks up my TV and my sofas and my chairs and my rugs and whatever else they can
plasma
get their hands
TV,
on.
Big screen. Mm.
Yeah. I get the opportunity to not have to go and start again from zero.
Yeah.
And, you know, the biggest... you know, one of my friends calls bodies, you know, our bodies ingredient zero.
Yeah.
In everything that we do, we need a healthy mind, we need a healthy body. And that's the thing that we need to take care of.
Mm.
So when you wake up in the morning and you take those 30 minutes to go outside, get some fresh air, go for a walk, come back, drink some water, and try not to live too much of a sedentary lifestyle.
Mm.
What you're doing is you're actually taking out an insurance policy against bad health so that you can continue to be productive. And so I think taking out insurance policies is actually really, really similar to that. You are preserving your ability to continue to earn even in the event that you suffer a calamity. So it's part of a responsible financial plan to say, how do you preserve the things that you've earned and how do you put yourself in a position where you don't have to go back to the beginning in the event that you suffer a calamity, because we know that, you know, these things happen. So you are as I think a responsible person, a responsible plan, you know, definitely an insurance portfolio should be one of the things that you consider after you have worked and earned the things that you have, you know, in the same way that you, you know, you'd have a medical policy so that you can go and see a doctor, you know, in the event that you fall unwell, have an insurance policy against your life, you know, something against, you know, inability to earn, something against loss through theft or damage or fire. Those things are important.
I suppose people shouldn't build that by looking at Teach walking around and say, hey, he's worth 10 million, this one. And so he keeps walking around. I'll build generational wealth with him.
He's worth more dead than alive.
Exactly. You know, I could build generational wealth with him. So him being alive for me doesn't help me build my generational wealth.
One hopes, though, that, you know, you live your life in such a way that people value your existence and on your insurance policies.
That's a difficult one. Now, let's draw to a close. Where do we start? You said have a plan, take out a life policy. Where do I go from here?
I think, you know, you take out, you know, have a plan, put together a will. Make sure it's proper. It can stand up to scrutiny. You know, and the most important thing, I think, and we started there. So if I were to sum this up, you know, to say, you know, what are the key things that we should take with us tonight? Mm. Is that what we pass through generations is not just monetary.
Yes.
It's not just houses and cars.
Yeah.
And money and gold bullion.
Love
and
that.
And you know, it's not that, you know, we pass on through generations. So You know, I, you know, my mother is late, and she was not a rich woman. Well, you know, she did okay. She did well, but I sit and I think to myself, you know, what did my mother leave me? One of the things my mother left me was my mother worked hard. You know, my mother worked hard. You know, when I look back and I think back of my mom, I recall her sitting, working sometimes through the night. She was determined. She didn't have the highest level of education, but if work needed to be done, my mother would do the work, you know. And I'd like to believe that I got that from her. Yeah. I am not afraid to work hard.
Yeah.
So when I think to myself, what did my mother leave me? One of the things she left me was, listen, if work needs to be done, you are going to work.
Yeah.
You know. So and I think that that's positive. And I'm grateful to her for having shown me that. So the first thing, you know, is let's remember when we're talking about generational wealth, the money is good, the houses are good, the cars are good, but let's also realize the goodness that we can put in people that they can take with them. Those positive character traits, positive habits, even, you know, spirituality and knowing God, you know, which is one of the things that I also think my mother left with me to say that there is a God out there, one day will be held accountable. And live your life in a way that shows that you're answerable to a higher power. So that's the first thing. And when we do that, I think now every one of us who is a parent, every one of us who, you know, is an elder, now suddenly has something that they can actively work to make sure that they pass on.
Yeah.
The second thing is, yes, definitely, you know, money, cars, we work, we accumulate these things. We don't want them to disappear when we are gone. There are people that we would like to be able to have the benefit of these things even after we are gone. So we need to plan for it. We need to be deliberate. It's not going to happen by happenstance. Sit down, itemize your earning, your possessions, you know, draw up a will, make sure it's filed, make sure it's a proper will, make sure people know what to do. When you're gone, that is absolutely important. There's no way. And then the third thing is, you know, in as much as we've already touched on the fact that not the only things you leave are not just money and material possessions, you know, each one of us can leave material possessions if we are responsible in how we manage our finances while we're alive. You know, so we can't wait for that big paycheck to say to ourselves we're going to save some money or we're going to work towards something. Whatever little it is that we are earning, if we are prudent and we're judicious and we live within our means, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we can leave a little something.
Yeah.
And you must also know, you know, when you get left something, when someone leaves you something behind, you're not going to expect them to leave you $1 billion if they were not a billionaire.
Yes, definitely.
You will recognize the value of that $500 or that $1,000 if that's what it is that this person was able to put aside and save. So the trick is not excess, you know. I know the Bible speaks of a good man leaving an inheritance for his children's children. And you know, then people think, oh, you know, that's like a lot of money. You know, you left so much money that your children couldn't finish it and their children had to come and start spending it. But, you know, I think that, you know, that verse in Proverbs, I think it's 13 verse 21 or 22, when it talks about that as well, I think it talks of the beauty of a legacy, right? That you can live your life so well that people can still see value in your life long after you're gone. People can still speak well of you and people can still be proud of the fact that they can be associated with you after you're gone. I think that's the ultimate in terms of leaving a legacy, in terms of an inheritance, you know. And I take that not just from, I think as a Christian, to say, you know, you live your life in a way that people can appreciate the contribution that you made long after you're gone.
Yes.
You know, I think that's the ultimate legacy. That's the ultimate inheritance. But some money is also good.
Oh, definitely.
We didn't throw that away.
We need that
money. We just said let's look at it broader.
Yes.
And then let's be deliberate about it.
Yes.
Let's make a plan And then also, it doesn't have to be mountains. You can leave a little behind. But the only way you can do that is by being judicious with what you have.
Yeah.
So that you can create that little something to put aside.
So we need to be intentional and look at it very broadly. That's some of the themes that I'm getting from you. But thank you so much, Titch. Once again, really appreciate your time. The biggest enemy is, of course, time. You and I need to do a podcast these nowadays, and we put it on YouTube for 3 hours. And we have a conversation around these sort of issues. But thank you so much, man, for taking the time this evening. Once again, really appreciate your insights.
Thank you very much, Tapelo, and thank you very much to your listeners. I wish you all a good evening.
Thank you so much. That was, of course, friend of the show. It is Titch there talking to us about generational wealth. We really appreciate his time and some really interesting themes that he's brought in, challenged us to say, hey, don't think about wealth generation as just about money. It's more than just about money.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.